Welcome back to Security for Legal SaaS. I'm Alice.
And I'm Dan. Episode 22, Single Sign-On, SAML, and Enterprise Identity. Alice, last episode we covered multi-factor authentication. This feels like the next layer. How do large firms actually manage all those logins across dozens of platforms?
That's exactly right. Imagine you're a partner at a 200-lawyer firm. You use a case management system, a document review tool, a billing platform, an e-filing system, maybe a contract analytics tool, each one with its own login. Without SSO, that's five separate passwords, five places where your credentials could be phished, five accounts that IT has to manually disable when someone leaves. SSO, single sign-on, means you log in once through your firm's own identity system, and that one login gives you access to all of them.
Right. So the firm's IT team is doing the heavy lifting on authentication, not each individual vendor.
Exactly. And that's why enterprise clients don't ask for SSO as a nice to have. They require it, because it means they control the front door. They decide what MFA method to enforce. Remember the passkeys and hardware keys we discussed in episode 21? And that policy applies everywhere. One set of rules enforced consistently across every application their lawyers use.
So how does this actually work under the hood? I keep hearing SAML thrown around.
SAML, Security Assertion Markup Language, is the protocol that makes enterprise SSO work. It's been around since the early 2000s, and it's still the most common SSO protocol in large organizations. Think of it like a trusted letter of introduction. The firm's identity provider, that's their system that knows who works there. It's like a notary. When a lawyer tries to log into your application says, "I don't know you. Go get a signed letter from your firm's notary." The lawyer goes to the firm's identity provider, proves who they are, password plus MFA, and the identity provider signs a document that says, "This is Sarah Chen. She's a senior associate in the M&A department, and I vouch for her." That signed document is called a SAML assertion. Your application checks the signature, confirms it came from a trusted source, and lets Sarah in.
Yeah, that makes sense. So your application never sees her actual password?
Never. Your application never stores it, never transmits it, never handles it. The firm's identity provider does all of that. Which is genuinely good security design. You've removed an entire category of risk from your system. If your database gets breached, there are no password hashes to steal because you never had them.
What about OIDC, OpenID Connect? We covered that in episode 20. How does that fit in?
Good question. OpenID Connect is the newer, lighter weight alternative. It's built on OAuth 2.0, uses JSON instead of XML, and it's much easier to implement. For new applications, OIDC is usually the better choice. But here's the practical reality. Many large law firms still run identity providers that only speak SAML. Their Azure AD or Ping Federate was configured years ago for SAML, and nobody's migrating it. So if you're building legal SaaS for enterprise clients, you'll probably need to support both.
Now, you mentioned SAML uses XML. Are there security risks specific to that?
Yes, and they're not theoretical. In March 2025, GitHub disclosed a pair of vulnerabilities in a widely used SAML library, RubySAML. The attack exploited something called a parser differential. The library used two different XML parsers internally, and they interpreted the same document differently. An attacker could craft a SAML response where the signed part said, "I'm a regular user," but the part the application actually read said, "I'm an administrator." The signature checked out because the signed part was technically valid, but the application granted admin access to the wrong identity. You could literally sign in as anyone.
That's alarming. How do you defend against something like that?
The OWASP SAML security cheat sheet has the key guidance. First, validate the XML structure before you check the signature. Reject anything malformed before processing. Second, Use absolute XPath expressions when locating assigned elements, so an attacker can't move them around in the document. Third, prefer SP-initiated flows. That's where your application starts the process, because they include a request ID that binds the response to a specific login attempt. AP-initiated flows, where the user starts from the firm's portal, are more vulnerable to replay attacks.
Right. Let me ask about something practical. SSO handles logging in, but what about when someone joins the firm or leaves?
That's provisioning and deprovisioning, and it's where a protocol called SCIM comes in. SCIM, System for Cross-Domain Identity Management, is a REST API standard that connects the firm's user directory to your application. When IT adds a new associate in Okta or Azure AD, SCIM automatically creates their account in your platform. When that associate leaves the firm and IT disables their directory account, SCIM automatically disables their access to your application too. No manual steps, no delay.
And without that, someone who leaves the firm could still have active credentials.
Exactly. Those are called orphaned accounts, and they're one of the most common security gaps in enterprise environments. A firm with 500 lawyers using 30 different SaaS platforms, that's 15,000 account application pairs. Without automated deprovisioning, every departure requires someone in IT to manually disable accounts across all 30 systems. Missed one and a former employee, or anyone who compromises their credentials, retains access to privileged client communications.
Yeah, that connects back to the Snowflake breach we've been hearing about. Stolen credentials on accounts that should have been deprovisioned.
It's exactly that pattern. The Snowflake incident in 2024 affected over 165 organizations. The attackers didn't break any encryption or exploit a zero day. They used stolen credentials from old InfoStealer malware, and the accounts didn't have MFA. If those accounts had been automatically deprovisioned when employees left, or if MFA had been enforced through SSO policy, the breach wouldn't have happened.
One more thing. How does SSO work when your platform serves multiple firms? Firm A and Firm B both use your tool, but they have different identity providers.
That's multi-tenant SSO. Each firm gets its own identity provider configuration in your system. The routing usually works by email domain. A user types their email address on your login page. Your application sees the domain, say, buckermexi.com, looks up which identity provider is mapped to that domain, and redirects the user there. The important thing is that each tenant's SSO configuration is completely isolated. A misconfiguration in Firm A's setup must never affect Firm B's authentication. We'll dig deeper into multi-tenant isolation in episode 27.
Right, quick summary for anyone building legal SaaS. Support both SAML and OIIC, implement SCIM for automated provisioning, and prefer ISP-initiated flows for SAML.
And keep your SAML libraries updated. Those parser differential attacks we discussed, they targeted real production systems. One library update is the difference between secure authentication and sign in as anyone.
Next episode, RBAC, roles, permissions, and scopes. How you structure who can do what inside your application.
Until then, I'm Alice.
And I'm Dan.
Security for Legal SaaS is a series written with AI assistants. Alice and Dan are AI-generated voices. No professional advice here, just education.